Hello everybody, welcome to this presentation about keeping the past and preserving the future for the Iraco programming language. I hope you will enjoy it, take care and always be safe in these turbulent times. So maybe a little bit about myself first, in case you don't know that. I happened to be at the announcement meeting in 2000. I wrote some specifications in 2005. I mean, there's not really specifications, there's not like not really like speculations. It's somewhere in between. Anyway, specifications I call them nowadays. I got involved again in 2012, initially for documentation only. I became a core developer from 2013 onwards. I've been writing a weekly blog from 2015 onwards. And I've become a Iraco Steering Council member. So what is this presentation about? Well, it's important to know about the past to be able to make new mistakes in the future. This presentation shows how you can actually research the past, keep up to date on current developments, and how you can prepare your production code for the future and be liked by your sysadmins and guard against issues with dependencies. And we'll also throw in a little bit about how the Iraco ecosystem actually works. So, if you're interested in history, so could you go for some deep spelunking? I guess you could. That's where the original design documents, the original design documents are basically located. It's a lot of text and people have been working on it for many years, but it's basically nowadays only of historical value. In many cases, it gives you a background on how ideas about certain features were formed over time. It can still be used as a source of ideas, but it should not be considered authoritative because the test suite nowadays is the authoritative thing. Anything that any implementation of the Iraco programming language that actually can run the test suite can be considered a Iraco implementation. Now, over the years, people have been spreading the word and have been writing blog posts, and they've been posted on many, often now defunct websites. This is a pity for several reasons. I guess the most is that they are gone, but they also mention Perl 6 rather than Iraco. So that's why I started the CCR project, Collect, Conserve, Remaster project, to attempt to preserve and update all these blog posts. It basically consists of three phases. Collect, basically finding the URLs of blog posts. Conserve, creating local copies, so we actually have a copy of the blog post should the original URL become unavailable. And a process of Iracification of the blog post for prosperity. And the result of this should always be that we get better searchability for the Iraco programming language on the interwebs. So this is the repository where all these things have been kept so far. But there's not all of it in it yet, and that basically still needs a lot of work. So you can help the CCR project if you want to. I'm personally looking forward to any people taking the CCR to create a very nice website with the best of Iraco. But you can also help with collecting URLs or help conserving URLs, or even better, help remastering blog posts. In any case, any help that you that will be offered by you will be appreciated very much. And I'm looking forward to actually see all of these very nice blog posts by, for instance, Sofik CNET in their new forum, somewhere published in a very nice layout and good searchability. So let's go back a little bit. If you really want to research stuff about Iraco, you probably want to also find out more about the actual development of Iraco. And for that, I've created a website that actually contains all of the historic IRC logs and current logs. Because basically, since the first implementation of Iraco from 2005 onwards, most of the communication has been on IRC. Before that, it was mostly on the mailing list, but from 2005 onwards, it has been mostly on IRC. And therefore, the IRC logs are a good place for information about how things came to be. It provides a historical record of the conversations that were had by the RACO community, and it also provides live updates on all current RACO IRC channels. If you really are interested in the raw form, you can actually see the raw logs if you want to. They are actually saved in a GitHub repository, which is updated daily, and they are exposed by the web server that is completely written in RACO. And that web server provides search, filter, and gist capabilities with infinite up and down scroll. And of course, all of this is completely open source. The repo where the actual logs are kept is here. But have a look at the search options that you get on the web server. So on the left-hand side, you can open up a search window. And the search window, when you're browsing a channel, you can actually look for words, either as words or strings or at the start of a message. Results are by default presented from the end, with the most recent last, unless you selected old at first. So if you're really interested in historic things, then you select old at first. If you are interested in recent stuff about something that you're looking for, then you don't check that. You can limit your searches to certain nicks and optionally include their aliases, like the underscore after it. And you can actually select to search for both text as well as control messages, such as people joining and leaving a channel. Or basically you can select for either control messages or text messages. And finally, you can actually limit your search to a given period. When you have the result of a search, you can actually limit this by filtering them further. And this is done actually on the client side. So in your browser, you can select to see only messages by with a certain text string in it, or not have a certain string in it, or only select those messages that only are from certain nicks or not written by certain nicks. By default, the system messages are not shown. You can select to actually show them. By default, you will get to see the any commit messages, but you can select to not see them. And by default, you can actually see all Camellia output, and you can select to not see that. So let's take this for a spin, hey? So let's have a look at, let's see where Larry Wall, aka Tim Toady on the channel, said something for the first time on the Pearl 6 channel. So we select oldest first. You make sure that we enter Tim Toady there in the next field, and we press enter. And we get a result. So you could see that at the 22nd of February, Tim Toady said something for the first time on channel. Now, with the little ellipsis on the right-hand side, you can actually bring up a pull-down with options. And one of the options is actually show on day. Basically, it will take that message and show it to you on the day it was made in a day view rather than a search result. If you do that, you get something like this. Here you can see other people after Tim Toady said something for the first time, and people are welcoming it, and etc. etc. So that's all nice, but actually, this was not the first thing that Tim Toady actually, or I should say Larry Wall, actually said on the channel. If you go on a little more spelunking, you will see that actually, if you show the system messages as well, and basically limit the messages to the nick Larry and Audrey T, you will find that actually Larry already joined 10 minutes earlier as Larry, but apparently that was already registered by somebody else. So for about a minute, Larry Wall was known as L Wall on the channel, but then changed it to Tim Toady, and it was Audrey Tang that at the time that actually registered that nick for Larry Wall, and so that's how Tim Toady came to be on the channel. When you're browsing a channel, you can actually have another few options there. In the browse pull down, you can select whether you want to see what is happening live on the channel. Of course, the channel should still exist, so anything on the Pulse 6 channel, you won't have a live button there. You can show all the messages of the day so far. Of course, this is only for a live channel, channels that are still in operation. You can select a random date. I mean, if you really want to browse and want to be shown around the place, you can use that. You can also see the raw log of the messages. This is mostly for debugging, but if you really want to go in there, you can do that. And there's also an overview for all the years, months and days in which there were messages on this channel. So this is how you can actually use this Logs web server. And yeah, it's a very nice thing, and it has been used already by quite a lot of people so far. But enough about this. This should probably be a presentation all on its own. So let's go on to the next part. And this is about preparing production code in Raku. Any production environment depends heavily on the foundation on which it is built. And historically, work on a foundation has been a cause of many failures in production environments. Recently, there was a thing about Leftpad, a very simple library that the author removed from an ecosystem, and all of a sudden a lot of things didn't work anymore. And that is something that we don't want in Raku, so we actually have ways of getting around that. So in Raku, you can cement your foundation to the ground so that you don't have to worry about work on the foundation of your production code. Before we go on a little bit about that, is basically I would like to go into the use of uselib, aka minus I, or setting the RakuLib environment variable. This should not be used in a production environment, obviously, unless you really understand what you're doing, because it basically defeats any versioning checks that might be specified with use statements. And that is probably not what you want. Specifying directories in which Raku modules live is really a development and testing tool only. So if you want, if you are serious about your production code, you should create a meta file for it and basically install it with zev install dot in that directory. And that will ensure that your code will continue to work and refer to the right things. So what does it actually mean if we say use foo? Well, that basically means find any code in install code in the install base identified by foo. Select the one with the highest version number. Make sure it is compiled or pre-compiled. Load the bytecode, run its main line, and import its exported symbols into the current lexical scope. That's basically what